maybe it'll be of interest to us. Yeah. And I have his card too.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Hi, good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 6th, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Alrighty. Well, thank you again. Good morning. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to a consideration or proclamation designating October as National Community Planning Month in Story County. Jerry Moore and Leanne Hart, come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. I think it should show up okay. Well, it's that time of year again. October is upon us, and not just fall, but every year October is National Community Planning Month. I'm here wearing a different hat, and I'll get to that shortly.
See the hat on your head at all.
I know. It's the invisible one that I change many times throughout the day.
I feel better then.
Jerry's here as your planning director, but I'm going to just lead you off on this, and we have like a tag team presentation we're going to give.
Okay.
The theme that the American Planning Association has this year for the National Community Planning Month is Healthy Communities, Healthy People. And the overall message is what we do with our built environment through land use planning, economic development, roads, infrastructure is that has a definite impact on our residents' health. So again, Healthy Communities, Healthy People is the overall theme. Why I'm here as your County Outreach and Special Projects Manager, I am actually one of many APA ambassadors nationwide. I was appointed this August, I believe, or September. I'm a member of the APA, and what I'm here doing and throughout all of Story County and all of Iowa, there are two in Iowa, promoting planning as a profession in communities for, again, protecting residents' health. As the slide says, it just leaves our time, experience, and talents to advance the public understanding of planning and promote the planning profession. So that's why I'm here for National Community Planning Month today, and obviously Jerry is as Planning and Development Director. I'm really pleased that I am able to participate in this program. I was selected to do this. I have a year-long effort. It goes through next August. Where I'll be doing this is my official kickoff, a lot of outreach on planning. How are we, as Story County, going to celebrate National Community Planning Month, proclaiming October as such? Getting social, using a hashtag planning month on our social media. That's what I'm going to do when we talk about C2C planning, too. Or I have every week some deliverables I'm going to put on social media about just the getting healthy message. This month's kickoff presentations on what is planning to civic groups through that ambassador program. I'd like to pitch the idea of a community photo contest online, just reaching out to our Story County residents. What does Story County mean to you? This will help us actually develop our wealth of images, too, with their blessing. Still trying to figure out if there's a prize. I was going to try and talk to Mike Cox and see if Story County Conservation can kick in something. APA has a wonderful kids planning toolbox that we intend to send out next week or the following week to all the school districts. It's a great tool that kids just go on. Everyone's so technological these days at that age that they have a lot of fun doing it. And then in our story, Jerry's written an article about the C2C plan and development review, and I've got one general on what is planning. This is a cover slide of what I give to the civic groups for planning in Story County. And then do you want to give a brief update on the C2C plan?
Yeah, I guess my role is to comment on the fact that the proclamation, I think, is very timely because we are going through this comprehensive planning update process. It's a great opportunity to extend a very big thank you to the Zoning Commission, to our citizen volunteers, to our leadership, to our staff, everybody that's been involved in this process. It's greatly appreciated. In the end, we're going to have a planning document that is going to be very useful, insightful, and provide benefit to our citizens for many years to come.
And we're closing the youth survey today or tomorrow and getting ready to deploy the Iowa State survey. So we'll continue to get public input using the hashtag, the Planning Month and C2C Plan, but also continue to promote the C2CPlan.com website. We still want that public input, and that's the cornerstone, not to play on that word, but of the plan. So the proclamation you have before you is a very simple one. You've seen it a couple times already, but there's a little twist this year. APA has a nationwide proclamation contest going. Last year they received proclamations from 27 states, so jurisdictions within those states submitted them. They put it out there to the planning profession if we have our jurisdiction sign one, adopt one, and sign one, and we scan it in. There's some wonderful written documents that were getting entered into a drawing to receive for the lucky winners of. Simple, but I mean, I looked at the documents this morning. They would be very beneficial as just a technical resource. So with that, I just wanted to take the opportunity and share. I mean, it's National Community Planning Month.
Or thought, as you look at what's happening during this month, and Darren's probably familiar with this as well, Ames through the MPO has done some strategic planning, long-term planning, infrastructure stuff, 2040 Drew, something like that, I believe like that. Here again is another example of a model. I'm sure there's been a couple other cities that have maybe done something. Is there a way that we could kind of reach out to find out, you know, where they are, and if we could just kind of give, you know, credence to the fact that this is just more than just Story County government,
yep.
But it's essential for us to plan for the future. And I think through Iowa State and the Research Park and all the different things that have come in, I think we have a really tremendous report, or I shouldn't use the word report, but there have been extensive thoughts given to the role of planning and the future development for the betterment of Story County for the long term. And I think that if we could capture some of that through your efforts, I would suggest that maybe we consider looking into that.
We can do that. And in this case, we don't need a photo op unless Jerry would like one with the board.
Fine.
Just action on the proclamation.
Oh, Joe, this is your chance, man.
I would make a motion to proclaim the designation of October as National Community Planning Month.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Jerry, Leanne, thank you to you. Jerry, thank you to your staff. We're fortunate, very fortunate here in Story County to have such an outstanding planning and development team, and it is a true benefit to Story County, the work that you guys do. With that, Toot,
aye.
Clinton,
aye.
Sanders, aye. October is National Community Planning Month.
Thank you.
Consideration of minutes from September 29th.
Move approval.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed for.
Move approval.
Second.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions passed. Consideration of claims from October 8th for October 8th.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
Motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda board, please add road closure 1637 and 1638 and utility permits 1629, 1630, and 1631.
Move approval with noted changes.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. That leads us to public hearing items. Discussing and consideration of Resolution 1614, amending the urban renewal plan, Story County Urban Renewal Area, Leanne Harper.
See, Wayne, I have a different hat on. Yeah, you might need this one. Thank you. Well, after a couple months of hearing presentations by the applicants and some discussions on process, I'm actually here before you today with the official resolution taking action on the 2015 Urban Renewal Area Project applications. Process that you've always followed for discussion and consideration, having a funding discussion, the projects to approve, and then the amounts to fund. The action is before you today is kind of threefold, or the outline I'm going to do is, first of all, I'm going to give you an overview of the projects. Not discussion of the projects, just a brief overview. And then we'll go to action on the resolution number 16-14. According to the state code, this has to be a public hearing. So at that point, you'll open it up for public hearing. I do want to know, every year, it seems a little bit awkward, but the resolution incorporates all the applications that were received. Whether or not you fund them, and that's the last bullet point, they're included in the plan. And then we go back the next year and we remove those that were not funded. So when I get to the details of the plan, they'll become more clear. And then, again, the draft resolution does, the draft plan continues that practice. Then lastly, after that action through public hearing is done, you actually discuss the projects and decide which ones to approve and fund. And then all the funds. With that, direct me as staff to send out the award letters. So on to the projects. We received from Cambridge for a new multifunctional municipal building. Total project cost of $1.9 million. They are requesting $60,000. Kalonesco School District is asking for the phase three improvements for the playground. You've already funded phases one and two. Total project cost $21,622. Amount requested is $15,422. City of Huxley is requesting $18,200 for a project that totals $27,500 for expanding their Centennial Park playground. City of Slater has two applications that are before you. The first one is completing Main Street improvements at just the corner of Main Street and Marshall. You'll recall last year you have funded some in front of City Hall as a continuation of that project. The total project cost on that is $61,500, and they are requesting $46,124. I forgot to change 2014 to 2015 on the slide. The second project is acquisition and renovation of buildings at 404 and 406 Main Street. That they are requesting $30,000. That total project cost is about $121,500. And Story City is requesting $80,300 for a total project cost of $401,500 for their South Park project. So in total, six applications were received from five separate jurisdictions. Total project costs are about $2.5 million, a little over that. And amount requested is $250,047 for the Urban Renewal Area project. So at this point, I want to just briefly go over the proposed changes that are outlined in Resolution Number 16-14. I know you all have digital copies, but I did also give you a paper copy of the proposed changes to the Urban Renewal Plan. The changes outlined are in Section 2, which is the property to be included in the Urban Renewal Area. Items number 10 and 11 need to be, and 17 need to be stricken. Those are projects that were not funded last year. Then new items 18 through 24 are those applications that we received today. And then going on to Section 5, additional projects, changing the dates, adding August 2015 and the years. So then same thing, adding the new projects, the bullet points on the end. And then section 8 on page 5, the county financial information, making sure that the numbers are correct for this proposed go-around. And then, of course, the map at the end was updated with all the projects. And those that were not funded last year were removed off the map. So with that, are there any questions on the proposed amendments that I could answer for the board?
No questions?
No. Mm-hmm.
We have our auditor, Lucy Martin, with us. And Lucy Martin, anything you guys want to add before we open the public hearing on this? Okay. Anything? All right, with that, we will open the public hearing for discussion of Resolution 1614, amending the Urban Rural Renewal Plan, and ask if there is anyone who would like to address the board on this topic. Seeing no one moving to address the board, we'll close the public hearing, and I'll turn to the board for questions or action.
I don't have any questions. I would actually move consider the Resolution 1614, amending the Urban Renewal Plan, as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Truth?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1614 passes.
Okay, and then that takes us kind of seems back, but now you're to the point where you need to decide which project applications you do want to fund and at what level, what amount. So I can go back and just go back to this total slide right here that has all six of the applications up there, or I could go project by project if you'd like me to. I'll take direction from you.
The only question I had was on Cambridge. Mm-hmm. We had that question early on about the appropriateness of using TIF funds to fund a municipal building, and they were going to do a little further work on
that. Yep, and we've got that. Okay. We've got that cost benefit. Scott DeYoung did come back into us.
Okay. Could you repeat that again, Leanne? I'm sorry.
The Code of Iowa says if, and I don't have the exact language with me, but if the funding intended to be awarded for projects that are like city halls, fire stations, those types of projects, essentially a cost-benefit analysis has to be provided by the applicant in this case that demonstrates that this is necessary. Funding is necessary in order for the project to go forward. And Scott did email that last week or the prior week. Since we have that.
And so, but once you receive it, is there an evaluation of it? Do you just accept what?
Yeah, I mean, it does. The project cannot go forth without the county's contribution.
So, okay, so that's.
It meets the requirements.
It meets the requirement. Okay, so that was part of my question. And the reason that I asked that question is I remember a year ago, either the fire station with it in one of our other smaller communities east of us, I think we, you know, there was some question about whether or not we could do that under the guise of proper use of TIF funds.
And in that case, if I remember right, one of their funding sources, a very large portion fell through, too.
Right.
That even with the county's contribution, the project was not doable.
Right. Okay. So even though it meets the requirements, I'm just not being the devil's advocate.
Sure.
But let's say even though it meets the, are we somewhat hesitant to go down that slippery slope, I guess, basically, because the way I look at it is if someone comes up and says, well, we can't move forward without county funding, and this is a building for these types of things, and you've established a precedent, how do you then come back and then weigh that other projects are going to get equal consideration? Because the way I see it, it's the ability of the local community to raise the necessary dollars using all other sources, and then because we have this pot of dollars made available, we can assist. So part of my hesitancy would be is, do we look at the other projects, first of all, and then come back if there is additional funding, do we then consider, you know, that or at a lesser amount? What I'm not saying that I'm 100% comfortable with this there, even though they meet the requirements, because this was an area that statewide has received some concern. I mean, people have different views in terms of using public dollars, TIF dollars, in this particular manner. So I just wanted to get your reaction, and I trust my two colleagues hearing their comment would help me see if I'm just totally off base here.
I think, just in summary, I think your concern is valid that what type of precedent is this set. And the situation is different when you compare it to the Collins situation.
Right.
And just the funding streams that are available in this case are, I think, a little bit more solid than what was available at that point. But I'd like to say that as a board, you review these on a case-by-case basis. And even if you are setting a precedent, even if you think you're setting a precedent, I think you need to take a step back with each application and look at it as a new application rather than just like a land use decision. I mean,
right. And I definitely appreciate that. And I think that's what we've always tried to do.
So Wayne, for me, and I'll just run through it. As I went through the applications, and you know, this is our third year in. This is our third year in. It feels like, you know, the first couple of years we really had to weed through and figure out what kind of things we were going to fund. There were two that jumped out to me that I had more questions about that I really wanted to understand more and decide whether, from my point of view, that this was appropriate or not. One is Cambridge, and whether the construction of the multifunctional municipal building is an appropriate use of these funds. And the other one was Slater, just funding two projects in Slater, and that kind of just rose to the surface for me as, okay, are we going to fund 75% of redoing the corner of Main Street and Marshall? And I was able to come to yes for me on both of them for different reasons. One, for Slater, I think it has a great impact on that town. I think that that's a project that does not get done without the county stepping in and supporting it. I believe that our original goal in all of this was to positively impact the towns in Story County, specifically the small towns, but all the towns in Story County and the rural areas, as we've done with Dakins Lake. And so I was able to come to yes. On Cambridge, I came to yes for a different reason, Wayne. And my rationale there was the city of Cambridge, first of all, this building will have a huge impact on the city of Cambridge. Secondly, 97% of the the funding they've secured in other places, and they're asking us to help them get over the hump, that last 3%. And an argument from some would be, well, are you telling me that the project wouldn't go without this $60,000? No, I'm not telling you that, but I do think it's appropriate for Story County to step up when one of our small towns really helps themselves. We want to help our small towns help themselves. We've done a great job of that in Searing. I think we can do that in other places. And the mechanism is going to be different in each one of our small towns. Maxwell helping with the Freedom Rock, I think, was a great way to do things. For Cambridge, I've come to the conclusion that this is a great step for Cambridge. It's a small piece, 3% of the total project cost that they're asking us for. And I think there is real value to us being a participant. And Wayne, I think your questions are really, really valid. I think I can sure go either way on this. I just happen to come down on yes for those reasons.
Anything, Paul?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this falls in line with what I think this board's philosophy has been all along, that, you know, one of the reasons that I ran in 2010 was to see if this board could reach out and help the small towns in this county, if nothing else, be a little bit better place for the citizens to live in, that live in those small towns. And if you've been to Cambridge, if you've been to a council meeting and sat in City Hall, you know that they're in pretty good need for a new center. And, you know, you're right, Rick, when you say, well, you know, you get the question, would this project go forward? Or why don't the people in town pony up a little bit more money? I think they've done a really good job raising the vast majority of the funds. They just need a little help from the county. They, you know, and they've come and asked us if we would be willing to partner with them. And I think it's a good fit. And I think it's the same with Slater. I had questions too about two separate projects. You know, the Main Street improvement at Main and Marshall is pretty similar to what we funded last year. The acquisition of the building on Main Street, that's not out of line with what we do with our facade grants and right. trying to help Main Street look like a better place. You hear it every day about, you know, small town America and how they're, you know, these towns are falling off the map. And I think if we've got the capacity to help keep them on the map, I think it's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars. We're not putting the county in debt. We're not going out to secure loans to finance these projects. And I think it's a good use of these dollars.
Well, I guess I want to thank both of you for doing that. More than anything, for me, when I have questions of this type or situations, I think it's important that we clearly vet, you know, what it is, what's our philosophy, what we hope to accomplish, does it meet the goals that we've laid out, because, you know, at the end of the day, when people take a look at that, they see, well, Story County government allocated X number of dollars for this project. And without that deliberation and clear focus of why this was a worthwhile project, and yes, it clearly met the criteria that we had laid out, I think we would be not necessarily shirking our responsibility, but we would be, it's kind of like rubber stamping, you know, a request.
Yeah, this should not be a rubber stamp.
And this should never be that, and that's why I appreciate so much the input that you have given. And, you know, obviously based on, you know, the comments that both of you shared, I can see myself, you know, certainly not disagreeing with anything that has been said. And I was just having some hesitancy trying to, you know, wrap my arms around whether or not we wanted to go the full request, or did we want to look at a lesser amount, or for that matter, did it really meet the projected scope of what we had done in the past? And so I thank you very much.
Well, I think completely appropriate, because of the requests that we got this year, the one from Cambridge is the one that you can't point to something that we've done in the past, that we've approved in the past, as being a solid rationale for why we would approve something like this in the future. The other point I want to make, and Leanne, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe that if these projects are approved, that we will have then utilized some TIF funding for projects in rural Story County and in every municipality with the exception of Ames and Gilbert. I believe that's right. I think
Colo.
We haven't done anything in Colo yet.
Just the school district, but that was up in Zering.
Oh, okay. We hit it up in the Colo National School District. Okay. So, if our goal was to have an impact on our towns in Story County, I think we're achieving that. But that's where I come down. And Wayne, I think you're 100% right. I want to go back to something Leanne said early on in this conversation, because I think it's completely accurate, and that is we really ought to take each one of these case-by-case basis. We should. It's appropriate to look at what we've done in the past and use that as a guide for the future. But just because we haven't done something or have done something should not automatically mean that we're going to do it next time.
I'm with you. Thank you. Okay.
We're taking these all in one fell swoop, and we need to go through them one at a time.
I think it'd be most clear to go through one at a time.
Let's do it.
So at the end of the day, and this is more of a lengthy question than you'll care to, but at the end of the day, looking at the total amount of dollars requested, the capacity is basically there to meet those demands. And that becomes the overriding, one of the overriding things.
The projected balance, projected because that'll change tomorrow probably, is 405-322.
Okay, I see that.
So 405-322. So the $250,000 you would not have to borrow. You would have the dollars available through the tip revenues, with another $155,000 left.
Great. Thank you, Liz. Thank you.
All right, so Colonesco Playground Phase 3. And we'll take a motion to approve if anybody wants to approve.
So move.
Second.
Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Colonesco funding is approved as requested. Huxley Centennial Park Playground Expansion.
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, a motion and a second as requested. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Cambridge, construction of a new multifunctional municipal building, as requested.
I'll move to approve that.
I will second it.
Okay. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Funding approved. Slater, Main Street improvements, the corner of Main Street and Marshall.
Move to approve.
Second.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Slater again, acquisition and renovation of 404 and 406 Main Street.
Move approval.
Second.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. And finally, Story City, the South Park project.
And that's that carousel and all of the other type of things that was tied into that. Move approval.
Second.
Motion to second. Clinton.
Aye.
Two.
Aye.
And Sanders, aye. Leanne, what else do we have to deal with on this matter?
I will take that as direction to send out award letters.
Please do.
And those applicants. And that is it at this point.
Again, Leanne, thank you, and all of those that maybe have assisted in this area and through the community outreach that we've engaged in the last 3 years, and I know that Drew and his contact working hand-in-hand with these municipalities as well. I think this is, again, a positive step for Story County citizens and for the betterment of all of our communities as we move forward to improve not only quality of life issues, but what I call community sustainability and community vitality. And I think these communities have stepped up and recognized that there are some things that would be help enhance the continuation of that. So, but I do think that these things does require someone really working directly with them, helping to make sure that our guidelines and objectives are clearly there and that they're following through on their part in terms of what I call skin in the game and so forth. So, again, I want to thank you and those involved in this process.
Absolutely. Leanne, great work as usual. And I think it's affirmation of our commitment to continue to help our communities in Story County.
And I just want to say thank you to Lucy and Lisa and Ethan.
They didn't have to do anything.
And Justin and Shelby for if we did this every month, it would be, it's almost like a learning curve every year, even though we have it down, we think. Then there's all, we have to go back. So it's not me doing it. It's a group effort. So
I told Leanne this morning when we were talking about this that for the last couple of years it's felt like we were in a dark room just trying to find our way. Now at least it feels like there's some light coming up in the room. We're starting to get there.
We're getting there.
There were two additional items. Consideration of publication of the FY16 budget amendment. The first of what will be very few this year, right?
I hope so.
How are you, Lisa?
I'm awesome. How are you guys?
I'm phenomenal.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so after I gave you this information, there was a conversation that I had with Alyssa in which we probably need to change this information.
Okay.
But let's go with what we have, and then we'll talk about what else we can do, what we need to do. Timeline. What I'd like to do is send it to the paper this week for publication. That means the public hearing would be on October 27th. Is that a Tuesday? I should look at my calendar a little better. Publication or the public hearing would be on October 27th. Okay. I gave you the information that I had put together for this amendment. Couple of notes. A lot of it is lowering of insurance needs for departments. Those departments, I just went through and took care of that, so they are. I did not consult with them, per se. The requested amendments in this budget request, or amendment, are the Board of Supervisors has asked for an additional $25,000 in contract labor.
Primarily due to the creation of two new bargaining units?
Primarily due to, yes, that's exactly.
Yeah.
Conservation requested some additional funding for wildlife habitat staff grants and some conservation land acquisition dollars. And environmental health, this is on the expense side, FYI.
Yep.
Environmental health, well rehab and watershed improvement grant, and IRVM, a lowering of equipment and machinery. And Justice Center facilities, that's the big one we've been talking about, that we're going to pay out that well field. And juvenile court, you guys voted right at the very beginning of the fiscal year to carry forward some funding, so I have to amend the budget for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that transportation, the HRTA information that was here last week,
right.
We're adding that to the countywide in transportation. Other than that, the majority, or all of the rest of these are items that are related to insurance, with the exception of two. At some point in time, I think it was decided that the postage machine rentals will all come out of countywide instead of out of individual departments. We took care of that for the treasurer's office at budget time, but the attorney and the sheriff we did not take care of yet. So I'm lowering their equipment, rent, and maintenance and raising countywide.
Good. Okay. Super. Let's see. So that I'm clear, looks to be like all said and done, reducing revenues by just over $200,000, projected revenues by just over $200,000, reducing budgeted expenses by just over $1 million. A lot of that is in CLP. Can you remind me why we budgeted revenues and expenditures in CLP? Was that just a timing thing that we
were putting that together in March? We were not sure how that was all, or in quite frankly, in February, we were not sure how it was all going to play out. We didn't know what additional revenues there might be coming into that program and or expenses for that program.
Okay.
Those were pretty much done spending and receiving.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and lower those and get those out of there.
Super. Looks to me like with you know what kind of things concern me, Lisa, so it won't come as any big surprise that I looked at the bottom line, and it looks to me like we may not only maintain a balanced budget, but now it looks like we've got a surplus of almost $1 million based on these changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling really, really good. I want to compliment you again. I've done it a couple of times. I want to compliment you again on the health insurance. I know you went into it with a lot of swag numbers as we were building the budget. We knew so little about where it was going to come down. And I think you and Alyssa did a phenomenal job making sure that our budget was sufficient to cover that without being excessive.
Yeah, as we talked about many times, it isn't just, oh, this many people are going to take it. It's where the dollars are going to be distributed at and which funds, whether it be secondary roads, rural, general. So, yeah, thanks. Alyssa and I did pound some numbers a lot. The one thing I do want to talk about, overall, the net effect for the general fund is we're lowering it by $229,000, and for the supplemental fund, $1.3, which is good for us when it comes to looking at self-funding some things next year. And then the mental health fund, we're lowering by $500,000. Overall, their revenues are going down by 0.5%, and the expenses down by 2.5%. Now, the one thing I do want to talk about, and I don't know if Alyssa wants to come and add to the conversation, apparently there is a need for dollars and extra help in your budget for an intern for planning, or for county for outreach.
Yeah, primarily for us, board, and just for way of recollection, we've been talking about starting to video these meetings, and that evolved into having an intern in community outreach to not only video the meetings. I mean, I think that is the intent, is that would be one of their primary duties, but also assist with some other types of outreach. I would think primarily technological kind of outreach on the social media kind of things. And it seems like there was confusion about whether those dollars were going to be plugged into our budget. It turns out that they weren't. And now, especially since we need to increase the contract labor as we look at negotiating with our new bargaining units, which was not something that we had budgeted for originally, we need to figure out, I think it's about $7,000 that we expect to pay in that internship through Iowa State. In order to have an intern that, like I say, not only videos these meetings and other county meetings so that the public has better access, but does some other things in outreach. And just give me a nod. Did I portray that correctly? And so that's where we are. We feel like we're about $7,000 short in what we've got in this budget amendment.
Correct. We had thought we were going to have some in contract services, which we wouldn't pay for this out of that line item. It has to be a payroll line item, but we didn't have, unfortunately, we had some circumstances that we had used and needed more money in that contract line item. So
since we have not sent this out for publication yet, board can just add $7,000.
Yeah.
If we choose to, once we send it out to publication, we can't add anything we can reduce. So board, I'll just turn to you. Unless I've missed on kind of the way that conversation went and how we got here,
So it's really a request to add at least approximately $7,000 for an internship, primarily to assist primarily with videoing board proceedings and other duties at the site.
To work in community outreach,
and
the duties will be as assigned. But I think the primary duty will be videoing and hearing, and then doing something with that, making sure that we're reaching out so that the community has access to those kind of things.
Right.
Well, I think we're better off to amend the money in. So if we do decide that's what we're going to do, we have it. As opposed to not doing anything with the budget and then deciding we want it, and now we don't have the money to pay for it.
Okay.
And are you thinking, or you want it in your budget as extra help, or in countywide as extra help?
Where does it make the most sense for something like that to go?
The board.
Well, the board, because I think when you look at Leanne's role and who she directly, you know, works with or through, and then everything else, and then with the board proceedings, I think it would probably be appropriate to have it there.
I think it should go wherever it's most appropriate for it to go. If we're going to add in $7,000 with the intent that it be in community outreach, wherever those dollars make the most sense going is where they should go.
So, Mr. Sweeney, can you come up
I'll adjust the...
Okay.
Basically, I just want... Today we're talking about, you know, we're amending the budget. This is what it looks like.
So when we make a motion to publish, we're going to make a motion to publish as amended here today.
Yeah, I'll make that motion.
Okay.
And I will second it.
A motion and a second. Further discussion. Lisa, anything else we need to consider before you publish?
I think that's it.
Okay. Good.
Who?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Publication is approved. Next is consideration of contract between Communication Innovators and Information Technology for exterior work to the Justice Center. Hi, Barb.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
We're all of a sudden, she's now been wearing a hat as a facility management director, huh?
Oh. You never know. I'm bringing you two proposals today. The first one is for some infrastructure improvements. The second for some cost savings, which everybody is all for that. The Communication Innovators Project, after a lot of sweating and concern, we've had some issues with the fiber connection to the Justice Center. And over the years, every time we have to dig up that handhole, we say, you know, this will be the last time. And it never has been. I think since I've been here, we've dug it up 6 times. So, acknowledging that our fiber needs are ever-changing and ever-increasing, this really should have, initially when the fiber was laid, it should have had a dedicated vault, which is called a handhole, where all the fiber comes into. Right now, how they access the hole is they drill through cement. And over the years, the cables running into that, the fiber cables, have been nicked. And so there's water getting in there. And also, they're full. We can't do any more. So what this proposal will do is route a parallel to the current route, fiber casings, and then move all the current casings to the new one. It's quite detailed, quite intricate, in that there are a lot of different vendors that have to be involved. It will be a major outage for the Justice Center, so coordination is important. And since Communication Innovators has done most of the work to this handhole, I feel comfortable with them doing the work. It is a $29,000 expense, which I had previously thought, well, I'll just put it in the budget for next year and see if it gets approved. However, with our Story Medical project, I had budgeted $25,000 to cover that, not realizing that they would in turn pay us back that total cost. So I do have that $25,000 in my budget that I can put toward this project.
Now,
any questions?
Is most of the work, trenching or whatever, they have the parallel on that you mentioned, is this done right at the Justice Center site, or does that mean it has to be connected through part of the other Nevada so that either from your, you know, to this building, etc.?
There's a picture there that Rick Splidger way. It goes from the handhole by the hospital, and there will be some parking lot that has to be torn up to put in the new route, but that red line signifies where the new route will be, and it is very much parallel to the current one.
Okay.
And if we go ahead with this, we need to notify the judges, and that's primarily where our judges park. We need to notify them what kind of time frame we're looking at. We'll get phone calls.
You'll get phone calls.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
We'll get phone calls. Questions for Barb? Fiber's here to stay.
Yep.
Technology's here to stay. We're full up. We don't have any way to access it. Yes, it's $30,000. Well,
we're on the verge of getting fiber out at our place.
East Nevada, yeah.
Wow.
I'll move approval of the improvements at the Justice Center for the
second. We're
all right. So we've got a motion to approve the contract between Communication Innovators and Information Technology for exterior work to the Justice Center.
Correct.
You second that, Wayne?
Yes, I did. Second.
Further discussion? Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. Thanks, Barb. Next, we're considering a contract between Solutions and IT for off-site storage and disaster recovery. This is part of that COOP COG that we're working on, isn't it?
It will be, yes. And we already had a disaster recovery plan in place, as you can see in the breakdown, the summary, and that cost us about $3,000 a year. In the event of a disaster, we have to pay about $11,000. And what this is, and I spoke last week at the manager's meeting about weekly work. Part of our weekly work is sending a backup of our AS400 to Solutions, which is all of our financials are on there. And then in the event of a disaster, they would host that backup. And we would have to run the daily backup up there, depending on what part of the week we're in. If it was a Monday, there wouldn't be a lot. But we'd have to run that up to Solutions, which is, a three-hour drive? And then they would host it on their machines and get it running. The new solution is going to be a significant cost savings, about $1,800 a year. And it's through eVault, which Solutions has formed a partnership with. And they've got about 10 customers on the solution right now. And wherever our backup goes, they've got two data centers, one in Pennsylvania, one in Utah. We don't know for sure which one we would be assigned, but in the event of a disaster, our backup would be air-flighted, overnighted to Solutions, and then they would host it for us with machinery, everything. We would not have to run a backup up there, and the cost would be a lot lower, about $4,000 savings. The if you look at the line item for $1,000, that includes the $250 a day that we keep the backup that came from either Pennsylvania or Utah, because it's on their disk, which is a specialized disk. Mm-hmm. But everybody's moving toward the cloud, so essentially this would be a cloud solution. Greg from Solutions has good things to say about eVault. He's liked working with them as a vendor. We've liked working with Solutions. I think this makes sense for us. It would give us a better time frame in the event of a disaster. It would save time. We don't know what form a disaster would take. So having somebody physically run a disc up to Spencer, I don't know what that might entail.
Depends on the time of year.
Exactly.
You know, I've made that trip quite a few times in my.
I have too. I had a son that lives up there.
This runs through discussion with Keith and emergency planning and our redundancy and all those kinds of things that we're just strategically looking at. What are the things that need to be in place in the event of a disaster when it comes to all the data and the information that normally we would assume would be stored in the cloud somewhere. But it's technically, physically, somebody has to have access to that, is what you're saying, whether it's us or an outside entity or an outside, I call it, if it's in Pennsylvania or whoever.
Sure.
If there's a physical depository of the information.
Exactly.
And so if you needed to access it, does that mean just by a trip of the switch, you contact them, you have that information where you're only down for, if at all possible, let's put it in terms of what would they anticipate would be the downtime in the event that we had a disaster to strike Story County for whatever reason?
That would be pretty hard to guess. If you look at the second solution, it would take 3 to 4 hours to load the backups.
Okay.
And depending on how quickly they got them, now if it was overnighted, it wouldn't be till the next day, depending on what time of day the disaster occurred or what time of day we declared the disaster. But then restoring the backups to their hardware would be on the outside 4 hours.
Okay.
So we could have our financials back up and running within 2 days.
Mm-hmm. And now just keep in mind, this is an event that would occur that takes out our server room.
Right.
Right.
Yes,
takes out all our information. And so, Wayne, it's not as I read through this, and Barb, help me if I'm missing, it's not that we've got an operable solution on a cloud somewhere. It's that we have an actual backup somewhere.
Right.
That then we can get all of our information up to the last point that we updated. We can get it all back within a day or two, which I think is completely reasonable if you have some kind of event that takes out our server.
Right.
This is another expense that you have to make if you never have to use it.
Exactly.
If you don't approve the expense,
right,
and you need it, you're really.
But it's even easier than that, Paul, because we've already approved a version of this. It's just costing us $3,000 a year. Now we're talking about approving something that's going to cost us $1,200 a year. A better solution, as I read it, that costs us $1,800 a year less.
Yes, it's an improvement.
Have you run this by our insurance carrier a little bit in terms of looking at, possible discounts in insurance, whether or not
We've asked in the past, yes. And since it's already, it's the same solution, just refined a little better.
Okay.
I don't see an additional savings, but yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Okay.
Other questions?
No, I would move approval of the contract for the information technology for off-site storage and disaster recovery for Colton.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. DeBar, thank you. Good job. I like it when we can do better stuff for less money. That's
a
good
thing. I like to come with solutions like that.
No agency reports today. Departmental reports. We have our engineer, Darren Moon, with us. Darren.
Good morning. I'm going to start out by talking about some of our flooding we've had this year, and the most recent flooding took place, it was like a month and a half ago, but this is probably our fourth or fifth 7-plus-inch rain in the county we saw this year that I don't ever remember that happening before. This one, actually, most of the rain hit up in northwest counties, actually outside of the county, but it took a long time to work its way through the county. This is when it eventually made it down to the Skunk. This is Jerry Ryerson's corner, his house in the back with the berm around it. But this, we always know this corner is going to go if we have any flooding at all on the Skunk. You see, it's washed the rock off the road. That was taken early morning, so it's a little blurry. This is up north 150th Street in Skunk River. And there's also a road that heads off this direction. A number of houses back there, and they're completely cut off when this happens, so that's a kind of a bad deal for
them. That's the only road out for them.
Yeah, it's a dead-end road. So as long as the Skunk's up, they can't get out. That's when the water went down, same area, scoured out the downstream side of the road and rock in the ditch. A couple more areas where we had the most damage on gravel roads. It's one of the worst ones where we actually had some of the actual earth under the rock get washed out, so we had to build that back up. All in all, we weren't damaged that bad. Maybe $20,000 worth of rock we had to put out there. It wasn't enough to get any FEMA assistance, but pretty fortunate we didn't have more damage than that. This is West 190th. Mm-hmm. Wanted to touch on that just a little bit on how we do our closures. And we had an issue, unfortunate issue, of a car getting washed off of this road at 4:30 in the morning. You can see there was really no damage to the road. This is before we did anything to it and the water went back down. So it didn't go over very deep, but we had a person go through this at 4:30. Well, they made it down this hill and crossed two of our bridges and made it about down to here. We see the opening, and that's where most of the water goes across. And you can see the car 300-400 feet out got washed downstream. We did not have the road closed. We were out till midnight doing road closures, and at that point we stopped, and it hadn't got anywhere near going over this road. So our crews made the determination not to close it. I think we made a policy change with this road in particular that we, any doubt, we're just going to close this road.
And I think it's an appropriate decision, but it's responsibility of every driver to not drive their car in the water. I mean, just don't do it.
No. That's what I would stress. Just don't drive through it, because from the information I got, they knew the water was there before they drove through it, and then they said the road was washed out, so they dropped into it, and you can see there's no damage to the road, so they must have just drove off.
Well, if there's water over the road, you can't tell where the road is. Everything's flat. And what's really sad about this is you go 1 mile south, and you got a perfectly good road that will get you right where you want to go, a paved road that will get you right where you want to go.
So it's a bad deal, but like I say, we put up signs after the water's over the road, and we do that the best we can and keep people out pretty late. Later than most counties do, I can tell you that for sure, and try to warn people at least, but we're not going to have them out there on every road. People are going to have to take some responsibility to not drive through water. Just wanted to comment on our mowing this year in particular with all the wet weather. Again, we've had a difficult time keeping up with the mowing. We rely heavily on summer help, and we're only able to track two this year. The board did help out and gave us a bit of a salary boost last spring. We're going to try to do some recruitment earlier in the year this year and try to get a couple more, because we just can't keep up with the mowing. To put it in perspective, we have 960 miles of roads, shoulder on both sides. That's almost 2,000 miles of road. So pretty much getting a mower and drive 5 miles an hour pretty much remains to Los Angeles, California. And we got to do that 2 to 3 times a year. Just to give you an idea how much we have to mow. And it's hard to keep up with. We've done our best. And if we get complaints on site or anything, we immediately make those top priority and head to those first, because there's some site distance issues that are causing. If they're safety related, we get to those as quick as we possibly can.
Darren, when you look at something like this, do we ever have a machine such as you just... I think like a hedge trimmer type thing, and you just kind of go and take a lot of the highlighting top area of that, and you get it down to, yeah.
That's essentially what it is. We have three tractor mowers with the side mower that goes out, I don't know, 6 to 7 feet.
Right. So it's not like really taking it down all the way like you would normally. Okay, that's what I was wondering. Okay.
But a lot of people dump things in the ditch you can't see, so it seems like it, almost all the time we have at least one of those mowers down getting repaired in the shop at all times because you hit wire and stuff gets wrapped in there and it does a lot of damage to them. But we do our best. I think we did a pretty good job, but it was extra difficult this year, and hopefully we can attract some more summer help next year to help out with that. Rock hauling, we did essentially three things. We had a contract rock hauling with Mark Marietta. We did about 116 miles in the southwest portion of the county earlier in the year. And then the southeast portion of the county we did with the contract gravel hauling out of the Marshall County pit. And then we did a lot more internally, just kind of like a contract haul of our own crews. We're kind of getting our fleet shifted over. This is our newest truck we got this year. We're going to try some aluminum boxes. We have so much problem with our boxes rusting with the salt and sand we have in the winter. We're going to try some aluminum boxes, see how they work. And now we have two truck and pups. This system can carry pretty much three times the amount of rock some of our older trucks used to carry. So we're much more efficient. We're hauling more ourselves. So we have two of these and one semi, which hauls a lot too. So we're slowly making that transition to haul more internally so we can save money and put more rock on the road that way. DOT just commented they finally got Highway 69 work done. That put a lot of pressure on our gravel roads in the area. They did a lot of dust control on the gravels, which helped. But we had a lot of extra maintenance, and we did end up billing them around $7,000 for some extra rock we needed in the area, and they don't have any issues paying for that. Dust control was another tough one for us this year. Both applications were put down right before one of those 5-inch rains the day before. Both of them really weren't forecasted to have that much rain. So
if we ever hit a drought, we can just send you out to do dust control, and then that will take care of the next day.
Yeah, exactly. This was taken the day after the dust control was put down, and that rain had hit, and it just the higher travel roads get those potholes. And the pictures don't do justice how bad these potholes are. So when we got a blade through the day or the week after dust control was put down, the residents understandably aren't real happy with it.
Absolutely.
But we got to do it, and that's in the permit that we're able to do that. But we struggled with both applications, and it was just a bad year, and we can't control the weather, but we do our best not to.
Where's that?
This is 530th Avenue South, kind of extension of University way down south by Kelly. Switching over to construction. Right away this year, we did the Berry Patch Bridge got completed, and we had two more larger box culverts completed, cast-in-place ones on 550th and 640th Avenue. The ongoing ones were this Hickory Grove Bridge here. This was taken just last week. Substructure is nearly complete. We got the abutment poured, one pier is poured. This pier is now poured, and the other abutment is getting poured pretty much as we speak. So then we'll be out of the water. Both piers, they had the issue with the high waters going over their dam. This one they built higher, so prevent that, but they had it originally lower. But that slowed them down a little bit, but a bridge like this is still going to take 4 to 5 months to build. So at 5 months, we're going to be at the end of November, and that we hope to have this done by the end of November, get this road back open after it's been closed a couple of years now. Moving on to a couple of box culvert projects. Well, first, there's the Hickory Grove Bridge that you showed the picture of. Right around the corner on S-27 is a box culvert project that's ongoing. Put this one off as long as I possibly could, because anytime we do a major closure on a paved road, it creates a lot of issues for us with traffic on the dusty roads. We have put some extra dust control all the way over to the country club here and around. We just applied again last week because it's getting a lot of traffic. We got signed down at Maxwell, but there's just no other paved crossroad to get across to it. It's going to get a lot of extra traffic, and we've got some upset people, especially on 19th Street right now. But pictures of that box culvert. The floor on it's essentially gone. These are holes through the concrete, and it's actually stuck underneath. And this hole here is that stuck material out where that flag is to warn people at the shoulder is pretty much gone. So we took it as long as we could, but it's under construction now. It's taking it down, and then putting the box culvert in. A little dark picture. I want to point out one issue we had. You don't normally have on a project, that major transmission line coming through here. During project design, we work with utilities to make sure everything that needs to be moved can get moved. They indicated to us that they were in the existing right-of-way, which means moving the lines, everything would be at their expense. After letting and the pre-construction meeting, they notified us they had made a mistake, and this pole is actually 1 foot on private property. So any work that we needed to do that was going to cost us $62,000 to do that work. So we worked with a contractor on this one, and the issue was getting a crane anywhere close to those lines is not a good idea. So we had to work with the contractor and come up with other options to set the portion of the box that went underneath these lines. And we were able to work out a solution that only cost us $3,000 to $4,000, so it ended up being much less. And once you know it, the backhoe was working down in this area and turned and backed into this power pole and did some considerable damage to it. That's just between the contract and the utility, but stuff like that seems to happen.
When do we expect this to be done?
They're backhoeing almost completely now. The next step is Manass has to come in. It's always a difficult transition to get another contractor to come in timing-wise, so hopefully that will be next week when the paving contractor comes in. The pavement has to cure, so it's going to be another week to 2 weeks out before we get it back open. But trust me, we're trying to get it done as fast as we can. This is another box culvert project, 670th Avenue down south, Maxwell. This is the bridge that was there. We had the issue with the tall back walls starting to tilt in. So it concerned me enough, we stuck this spreader in. This was just an indicator for me. You can see it's a little bit bent, that it's moved together a little bit more. After that last big rain we had with the flooding, I stopped by, and that's what it looked like. Immediately closed the bridge, and 2 weeks later it collapsed under its own weight. So fortunately, we had this in the pipeline for construction, and as of today, it's back open with a new box culvert in it and back open for harvest traffic. So that's the beauty of these precasts. They go in quick. They did this one in 1 week. So this was opened up actually yesterday, and then they moved to 695th, which is south of Colo. That should take about a week as well. And prior to this, they did one on Samuel Trail, but I don't have pictures of either, but those are both box culverts, similar to that.
Now, will we be coming back in the spring with seeding of the area that where they're exposed dirty? Yeah. It's like we did out on the
do some temporary seeding in the fall now just to get something growing over the winter, but yeah, RVM helps us seed these.
Okay.
Two paving projects this year that are completed. S27, 1 mile right here, and 2 miles of R70 extension south of Cambridge. These 2 miles were our oldest PCC concrete roads we had in the county. This one was 50 years old, so we got a lot of good life out of that, and this one was 45 years old. So the S27 project here, that's what the concrete looked like. Did a lot of patching over the years with concrete and then asphalt spray patching to try to get it smooth as possible. You can see what we did. We tried to salvage some of this base material. These white marks is, we call it a crack and seat. A big hammer comes in and pounds on this and breaks it into like 2 to 3 foot pieces. But we don't want to break the bond in between the pieces, so it's just enough to cause it to crack. That's when it expands and contracts. We're going to put an asphalt overlay on this. Those cracks come up through the asphalt. If we spread those cracks all out, it won't be just in one spot and make a big crack. It'll spread that evenly out, so that's why we do that. This is after it was cracked, and then this is after we put the overlay on it. one thing left to do on this project, since this was federally money we did this with, they require we put guardrail up to current standard on this bridge, so that'll come out. Unfortunately, there's a driveway right here, so we had to build a new driveway here because the guardrail's going to cut that driveway off. That guardrail probably goes in this week, but other than that, the two projects are completed. Same project, the Polk County line, I just want to point out the home base Iowa signs are up. We have those at most of our pavements that enter the county and state roads too, except I-35. So all in all, we did 7 bridge replacements and 1 major box culvert on S-27, so that was a pretty good year construction-wise on getting some much-needed bridge replacements done. Design work. We're currently working on 12 in-house designs for FY17 projects. Extremely busy this time of year because all of our final designs have to be in the DOT right about now, right when construction's at its highest point. We're doing good on everything except, like I say, that includes 4 asphalt overlay projects, 2 bridge deck overlay projects, and then 6 bridge replacements. 1 bridge replacement, we've run into a permitting issue that we don't have really any control over. That's that one in the corner of Maxwell here. Unfortunately, it requires a DNR permit. It's only an 8-square-mile drainage area. County standards, if it's over 100 square miles, we need an Iowa DNR permit. But because the city of Maxwell annexed half of that road, I'm not sure why they even did that, that kicks it into a 2-square-mile permitting. We thought the DNR would waive that, considering the area, but it doesn't look like they're going to do that. So a DNR permit can take up to a year to get. We have no control over that. So that has caused delays. That we submitted that permit 5 months ago and still haven't heard a thing. And it just sits in a pile. Unfortunately, they have so much work coming through the DNR office. They don't have staff to review them in time. That's why it takes so long. But that could get delayed 1 year, but it'll go in the next year if it doesn't get this year. Just a quick note on the FY16 budget. We're into the budget year now. We do have the option this year of amending in some of those road use tax money that we didn't know we were going to get when we approved the budget, $600,000 or so. At this point, I don't have any recommendations on amending. Well, my plan is to submit our FY17 budget and maybe build all that into next year. We could look at the option maybe of bumping the extra outshop up. I have concerns with doing that. I don't want to get any perception that we're using the extra road use tax money on
beyond roads, right?
That was planned much in advance of knowing we're getting the fuel tax, so I don't want to even create that perception. So we'll talk about that come FY17 budget time, how we can handle our extra fuel tax money. We are working on one of those shop sites, possibility of leasing some ground from ISU. This is the Kelly Corner, the Kelly Gas Station right here. There's a lot of development going on in the area, industrial buildings going here and here right now. So it would be a good spot for us if we can work out a lease situation with Iowa State and build that in that site.
We've had a couple good meetings with ISU, just trying to put together the final proposal to come before the board.
Correct. And the other shop, we're looking at possibly using our Roland existing shed site up there. We have just enough area, and we found there's no setbacks. They'll also probably be building right up to the property lines to do it, but I think we can get that to fit up there, so that'll be for the second shop. UT Highway 30, I brought this up again, just to add a couple notes. One, the meeting is next Thursday, October 15th, for the public meeting, and that's out here at the church, Baptist Church. Highly recommend any of the affected properties attend that. We've got the notice posted on our website, but that is coming up, and they will be holding an actual public input portion of the meeting. It won't be just like an open house like they did last time. We'll actually have a presentation, take public input.
Darren, the interchange in Nevada, which you don't show there, is already on the DOT 5-year calendar. Correct. This project right here is not on the 5-year calendar yet, and that's the discussion.
Correct. And I also want to, you've probably taken calls as well. I've taken a call from Vetter and the, from a Will Rogers from the Iowa Nebraska Equipment Dealers Association, both with concerns cutting access off to 590th in this area. And I discussed with Vetter, yeah, this bridge would probably need to be replaced. They say this whole stretch would have to be paved. I said that would have to be something that would be talked about with the whole project, but that's a possibility. While I have this up, I wanted to point something that just came up again this week. 590th, as you know, extends south, is a level B road, and this wind turbine has surfaced again. They're asking how they're going to get access. We had a meeting on that a year or two ago, and at the end of that, they kind of come up with a plan to build an access road on this private property. That must have fell through. Now they're back to 590th. They may approach the board again about possibly bringing this back up to level A. We had worked with the DOT a little bit on, they were going to try to stay with, since ours is level B, we can't rock the road. That's in our ordinance. We can't put rock in a level B road. They were going to try to stay within the DOT right away and come off and build an access to get to it, but that's not a long-term solution when the DOT shuts the access off. So they're going to be right back asking for the county to, you know, upgrade and put rock on the level B portion. So just not a good place to put a wind turbine if they want a good access to it.
Because there, for me, it comes down to what DOT ends up doing. So DOT, it appears, unless something changes, they're going to do the Nevada interchange. They're going to build the overpass at Airport Road. And that would mean that Airport Road is going to become the major north-south crossing for the center of Story County for farm implements. Well, it's not equipped to do that. You showed us the picture last time you were here of an implement coming down with the curb and gutter system. There's no room for it to happen. And so for me, if that project gets done, which would mean the closure of 600th, which right now is a pretty good north-south crossing, it would mean that 590th, if it is not restricted access, would potentially become a major north-south crossing of 30.
Yeah.
And if it does become a major north-south, then we're going to have to take that to a level A road anyway. I know right now it's a mud pit with the way the road is.
But there could be
a lot of things happening in that area depending on where DOT heads with the project on 590th and 580th.
Correct. But I want to get a heads up that they may be getting on a board agenda to discuss the wind turbine location and access here in the near future. Another item I just thought about while I'm on this screen to bring you aware of anyway, we had an instance where I think it's probably some of that new fiber going in. They went on the shoulder of 580th in front of Becky's Feet Store there, and they affected a tile. They bore essentially right through a tile. So they completely blocked it. So this whole corner is filling with water, and it is not moving. This is the Kingsbury's. I've been working with them. It's a very difficult issue to do a quick fix to, because that water, you can't fix a tile underwater, and there's nowhere to take the water. So just wanted to... We have turned it over to MediaCom to get the issue resolved. They're going to essentially have to come from the south side and try to get something opened up to just pump it through. But I've been working on that for a few weeks now and just want to make you aware, because the Kingsbury's are talking about suing MediaCom and the county. I don't think they have much case against the county, because the utilities have the right to use the public right of way. I just work with them on where they can place it. And they knew that tile was there. It's got both the intakes and the depths. They made a mistake of hitting it. So it's on MediaCom. They know that, but it could be a potential lawsuit there.
That's right. Make sure Ethan has all the information.
Sure.
So going back to that other, where the truck is, there's no way that tractor couldn't go up on the side of a curve there.
He actually hopped up on it a couple times unintentionally, I think, and I don't think that's probably good on that dual axle.
Yeah. So you end up having signs, markers, one-way traffic for certain times. I mean, this is going to really create a big issue for a lot of folks.
I mentioned the difficulty in building a ditch over here, taking the curb off, putting a ditch, because this is where the major, there's a number of pipelines running.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm assuming, yeah.
Big, very deep and all right there is about impossible.
And you remember a couple of years ago when we had the flooding, when they just, the buildings to the west of that, yes. They were supposed to do some work there. Is that, have we seen any reoccurrence of the water?
I think they've somewhat come to the realization that's just a low area and there's just nowhere for the water to go. It's, if we get the big rains, it's going to sit water for a while.
Right.
That area is actually drained by a small private tile that heads off to the west, so the county doesn't have a lot of control over the private tile.
Okay, moving on. Just quick, the City of Ames is still working on grant and university paving projects, which both impact some county road. Hopefully those will both get wrapped up before winter hits. And we're still working on our 2080, which I'd like to get in place before we get snow, to address snow and ice control on both of those roads. Pipeline projects, we had one pop up unexpectedly from the substation where he ended on 570th down to Barilla. You can see in the background that has started. The pipeline's laid out. They haven't started excavating yet, but that does require a county inspector because it's ag ground, even though most of this is in the city limits of Ames. Because it's ag ground, the county's required to inspect it. So that's in it. Neighborhood of $40,000 we didn't have budgeted, but
then they reimburse us.
They will reimburse us, but we still have to have it in our budget. But the good news is the other pipeline schedule is way behind, so we had plenty of money in there for pipeline inspection. It won't get used out of FY16 because the Dakota Access Pipeline is, I think, almost for sure after July 1st of next year, into the next fiscal year construction. So we have the extra money in there for pipeline inspection.
Do you want to talk about the Level B road that they're talking about putting the pumping station on or not?
That's just something to keep in mind whenever the pipeline does get approved, then we can start getting more into details on how they expect that Level B road to. Maybe Level B is good enough for them. I don't know for access to that. We really haven't discussed it with them yet.
Okay.
So we haven't had a lot of discussion with them until they actually become an approved utility.
Is there any, I assume the pipes that we see on Lincoln Way and are for the new water treatment plant that's going in. Does any of that cross over into county territory at all?
I don't believe so.
So it's all contained within the Ames Urban? Okay. I was wondering about that.
A couple of quick drainage district issues. This is that Dykstra issue down by Cambridge. That was the fence, and she wanted me to go back and look at this because she had concerns about the other angle that is better to see. The structure that was put in by the district 20 years ago, in my opinion, is still functioning exactly like it was intended to. They put it in, wanted to stabilize this upstream, which is the Dykstra properties. So in my opinion, it's actually helping stabilize that because this stream was degrading quite a bit and lowering. And the other issue was the fence. There was some damage to a private fence, and that's not a district issue. I looked at that, and that's between private property owners.
Vegetation, and we see the corn, I guess, to the right side up there, but the other, is that just more or less vegetation along the banks?
And
is that part of...
Yeah, and that's not an open ditch. That's all private property.
It's all private,
district responsibility. There's a tile that outlets right on the downstream side. That's where the district heads off.
Okay.
And that's what they're trying to do when they established this, to get that tile. And it kept silting in because the stream was degrading and the banks were sloughing in so much. That tile was getting covered up. So they did this 20 years ago, and it, in my opinion, is still functioning well.
Doing what it was meant to do 20 years ago.
So if she wants to take action, then this is one of the districts actually turned over to Cambridge. So Cambridge, she'll have to take a step with Cambridge, and I'm sure the county will get involved to help Cambridge with the history and what happened. This is the other drainage district issue. This is that tree in Fernald.
Right.
We discussed at our meeting. The pipe, the line, tile line runs right to the ditch bottom, and the tree clogs that tile and gets water in the basements on all the rest of the houses here. Was able to discuss that with this property owner, and they were pretty clear they do not want that tree coming out. they would much rather see a solid tile put through here. So I think that's the option we'll pursue when we do the rest of the DD20 work with the whole railroad. We can try to tie this in with it. And you may have received a call from him, Paul. I don't know if he had any different ideas when you talked to him.
Well, I thought he was leaving a message for my brother because he knew he spoke to it too. But yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, but I did talk to him, and that was basically what we had concluded, that he does not want the tree moved, but he wouldn't. He's not opposed to getting his, yard torn up for the additional tile.
The other thing is, it's going to mean that his yard's not going to drain into the tile very well.
Correct.
So, but yeah, that's his deal. With that.
There's an intake close by. I think it'll still drain. I don't know how much I brought the board into this discussion before, but I was working on a FEMA ordinance for the county. The county attorney had reviewed it, but I had put that on hold because what that was is FEMA was starting to tell the counties they need an ordinance in place stating our construction standards for the counties, saying we build 24-foot wide bridges or 30-foot wide bridges. What had happened, a lot of counties went into this a little bit too far, and they started putting exactly what they do. If we put 6-inch PCC concrete roads back, there's a concrete roads association and an asphalt roads association. They're like, wait a minute, because if you make an ordinance, that's all you're going to do. It created a lot of heartburn in the industry.
Right.
If we create an ordinance that says we're only going to do 24-foot wide bridges, we have to go by that for every bridge in the future. So I have concerns with establishing an ordinance like this. So I'm just kind of waiting to see what happens with a bunch of these other counties that have already established one and kind of created a firestorm. So that's on hold, and that's only...
How can one size bridge be appropriate for any county? I mean, it's road by road.
And where it kind of came in is the Hickory Gold Bridge. If they did fund that, that was only like a 16 or 18 foot wide bridge. And what they were saying is FEMA will only fund a 16 or 18 foot wide new bridge. Mm-hmm. Unless you have an ordinance in place that says you build 24 foot wide bridges or 30 foot wide bridges. And we do both depending on the situation. So I don't really want to tie us down into one.
Absolutely.
So the ordinance is a concern of me. So we'll see where that kind of heads with the rest of the counties first. And lastly, I just wanted to touch a bit on uncontrolled intersections. We unfortunately had a fatality at one. That was the first one since I've been county engineer in the 8 years. We've had a fatality at an uncontrolled intersection. I showed you this about a year ago. The DOT had...
What intersection?
It was down by Maxwell. I can't remember the designation, but it was a local resident that should have known where the intersections were. The other one was a younger kid. I don't think he lived right there, so I don't... It had to have two people from both sides ignoring, the intersection, so it was a bad deal, but I showed you this about a year ago. The DOT passed legislation that DOT had to create a map of all the uncontrolled intersections in Story counties about right here.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how many are around us. We're not the only county that has them. There's two big issues with me and most counties with uncontrolled intersections. One, we have 325 in the county, and to sign each one would take 4 signs, 2 stop signs, and 2 stop aheads. So that's about $400 for each one. Maybe $150,000 to sign the whole county. That's not the issue, the money. If that was found fatality, I'd do that in a heartbeat. The issue is you put these signs out in very rural areas. One, they get stolen a lot out in rural areas. Then you don't have a stop sign when people think there is one, so the other side doesn't stop no matter what. And the other issue is 3/4 of the year, there are stop signs up when they aren't necessary. So what's that train people to do? Ignore the stop signs and just drive through them. That's really the biggest issue for transportation engineers is creating that really environment where people ignore stop signs. You don't want to have that because then they'll ignore them all year and you'll still have accidents out there.
I don't know if there's a study, but I would think it would increase the speed on the road that does not have the, on the portion of the road that doesn't have a stop sign. If I know there's not a stop sign here, right, but the people come and stop, I'm liable to drive a little faster than if I know it's an uncontrolled intersection and I better take it easy and see what's coming, right, from the other ways. The other one is I go back to the same conversation we had on the idea of driving into water. You got to take some personal responsibility here.
And we also have to keep in mind that this particular intersection, because of the crops and fields, had grown quite high, so visibility wasn't as clear as it normally would be, but that's all the more reason that people should be a little bit more cautious when they don't have visibility, knowing there's a crossing road ahead. But, yeah, there were a lot of, there were a couple of extenuating circumstances that entered into this one, too.
Yeah. So at this point, not stop signs isn't necessarily the solution. It may come to that. The state could come out and say, because there's been a few this year that happened that were high profile. A number of kids were killed in another county. The state could come out and say all the counties have to control these, and then we just have to do it. But the DOT is counting all of our gravel roads traffic counts this summer. I'm going to get that data this winter, and I plan to put together some sort of a more of a policy statement that says we have intersections with one leg at this ADT and another at this ADT, then we should probably add stop signs at those high. There's a couple out there that probably should have. There's some new development down by Boone County Line with a winery that people have concerns with, and I think the traffic counts are getting enough where we probably have a couple that are warranted, but I'll bring that to the board sometime. But in the meantime, just wanted to have the discussion and see if the board had any other thoughts on what we currently do on uncontrolled
energy. And where stop signs occur on gravel roads, a type of a rumble type thing
can't work.
Can't work.
No.
Yeah. And just looking at all kinds of warning things that could come up. Yeah.
I think for me, I'd probably rather put up, there's an intersection warning sign, a yellow sign with the X not showing you there's an intersection coming up.
Right.
I'd rather have that than actual stop signs out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we had to go sign everything.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Mayor. To me, it's not the idea of $150,000. If you could show me that it was going to improve safety, then I'd be inclined to go that route. I'm not convinced that it improves safety, and I think you could sure make the argument the stolen stop sign is a great one. You're coming, you know I've got a stop sign. I'm driving along. There's no stop sign there. Somebody's got it hanging in their bedroom.
Right.
If here I come. I mean, I don't think you make the case that it improves safety.
And I had the board pass a resolution for stop signs last on the board agenda last week, and that was 19th Street, and that was for a detour of the S-27 box culvert. We originally put up those intersection warning signs because we knew we had some people coming through that weren't familiar with where they were. The public kind of demanded stop signs instead, so we quickly made that adjustment out there. And I do intend to keep that stop sign up permanently because 19th Street is getting more and more traffic all the time.
Well, I think there's places that it's appropriate. That's, we did one of these kind of in Milford, it feels like, not too long ago, or at least talked about doing one. I remember us having a conversation about it. But there are going to be intersections that a stop sign's warranted. I know we did it on 530th.
Yep.
But I think it's case by case. I don't like the idea of a blanket approach.
And did you, I hear you say that you're going to investigate the possibility where in a couple of cases there may be appropriate a need for stop signs, and that's usually dealing with the average daily traffic count and all of that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm waiting for the traffic numbers to come back because these are some new traffic generators, a winery and stuff that can create more traffic out there. So once those numbers come in, I'll take a look at them.
Want
to hear anybody,
but
we'll do that.
All right. Questions for Darren? Darren, thank you. You're doing a good job.
Keep it up.
No other reports. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Board may not take any action today due to the requirements of the open meetings, although we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone. Liaison assignments. Paul?
Pass.
Wayne?
I'm passing.
Nelson, Supervisor. Paul?
Board of Health at 2 o'clock.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I've got the Nightway update from the head of the cabinet at 12 today. Then 2 o'clock we are meeting with our safety committee just to finalize plans for next week's safety day. That looks like it's going to be an outstanding program for all of our county employees. And then on Thursday is the second meeting of the Children's Mental Health and Well-Being Work Group that I'm part of, and looking forward to that, and been reaching out and having conversations with members of our admin team on the adult region on mental health as to what some of the topics and discussions are as we try to craft a children's mental health system, and I'm scheduled to meet tomorrow with one other person that has had a long history in children's issues, and that's John Grush from Boone County. So I'm trying to make sure that I get as much information from people that have spent considerable time in this area for a number of years so that we have things on the table so we don't run across unintended issues that have clearly been looked at over time, and people in the human service arena, particularly at the local level, have found that it's probably in our best interest to steer away from some of the suggestions that are there. So I'm eager to see where we go, and very hopeful that by December we will come up with some guidelines and clearly some suggested outcomes and some potential action steps that this committee will take forth, because every time I talk to someone in the human service arena, they say we've done this time and time again, and we've come up with suggestions and ideas, and there's never been any action. So we're hoping this is going to be a first.
Well, good luck, and thank you for your service on that. I'm speaking on behalf of the board to the Veterans Auxiliary tonight about Veterans Affairs in Story County. I'll report back to you how that goes. I expect it to be a really positive meeting. They just got some questions about what's happening with staffing levels in Veterans Affairs. If there's nothing else, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.